The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Well, we start the program as usual on the Sunday morning with a review of the Sunday papers. I'm joined in studio to help me through that process by Ellen Coyne, who is the author of a book we'll be talking about with Ellen later on in the program called Dirty Dancing. Ellen, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, you've been going through the papers. First of all, I'll do the red tops because they are always quite creative. The Irish Mirror, Dubai Jeopardy. This is all about Daniel Kinahan. The Sun on Sunday, Daniel's Dubai Hellhole. They're kind of gleeful about the fate of Daniel Kinahan. The Sunday World, US cops help nail Kinahan. The other red top, the Sunday People, differs. They talk about the Strait of Hormuz, time for straight talking. On the broadsheets, the Business Post, derisory, PTSB shareholders advised to reject the Bowag deal. I don't know if that's how they pronounce themselves. At the Sunday Times, Kinahan lost UAE protection over the link to Iran. And there's a generous package been announced to encourage Ukrainians to go home. Healy Ray given ultimatum by the Taoiseach's aide. And this was the story that if you got one Healy Ray, you had to get both. Either in, both, or both out. And the Sunday Independent, a bit worrying for people planning on a summer holiday. Aer Lingus cutting 500 flights amid fears of fuel shortages. So, Ellen, you've been going through. What do you make of the stories today? It's a quiet enough weekend, even though the world's in turmoil.
It is, but I suppose there's kind of a link with a lot of the stories that you mentioned there, maybe except for Daniel Kinahan. Like if you were to take the Sindo splash, which, as you mentioned, is talking about how up to 500 Aer Lingus flights could be cut from its routes over the next few weeks, combined with some reporting in the Business Post about how there's some estimations that Europe might only have 6 weeks of jet fuel left. Now, obviously, apparently we have a reserve of 70 days worth of jet fuel in Ireland. But all of that is actually connected to the politics stories that are in the paper today. The fallout from, I don't know, could you call it a heave, a mini heave, or maybe like a kittenish push from some of the Fianna Fáil backbenchers towards their leaders. Like all of that fallout is basically connected to one political decision that was taken in Washington a number of weeks or months ago. And it will be the ordinary people that deal with the fallout, whether it's rising cost of living or whether it's their summer holidays being separate.
I saw that Shane Ross believing that, for example, Micheál Martin might be gone if it hadn't been for Jim O'Callaghan calling in the army.
Yeah, and there's actually a theory
that took the pressure off because if Callaghan is the heir apparent, Jack Chambers being deemed too young and also having made his own little gaffe with the presidential election campaign and so on and so forth, Jim Callaghan heir apparent, but then he made a mistake which leaves the king more or less intact.
And I did see a theory that was reported in the Sunday Times as well that had it not been for the three young Turks who came out with that letter this week, Derek Leary, who maybe has been a little bit overlooked, might have been able to swell enough momentum himself to...
I mean, if you think about Golfgate, he honourably stood down immediately almost.
He came out of that really well. And I mean, it was nearly like when people were talking about Derek Leary's role in that, everyone was prefacing it with how well got he is, how popular he is among the party. But I think if you're somebody that doesn't want Micheál Martin to be the leader, if the Taoiseach is reading the papers this morning, the only thing that's obvious to him is that no challenger is ready to take him on for the moment. The Sindo is talking about how his critics are saying, oh, he'll be given until 2027. Sure, that's loads of time for somebody who's been in the role as long as he has. And it kind of sounds now like he might be given the grace to jump before he's actually pushed. So sometimes these heaves can nearly fortify
through the EU presidency and all of that kind of thing and then prepare to go.
Yes, I mean, I don't know how much the public actually care about the EU presidency, to be honest. And
do you want a brand new leader of Fianna Fáil and therefore Taoiseach in doing a job that really requires, I presume, visible statesmanship?
Yeah, and anyone with enough political sense to be a real contender for the leadership wouldn't want to go into the role now when we've already spent $750 million on a cost of living package. That war is going to continue and things are more likely to get tougher for the government before they get better. So it wouldn't be a good time to take over as Taoiseach anyway for a challenger.
Now, the general politics of the thing, that story the Mail on Sunday has about you either have both Healy Rays or you have none. Seems to be the message that the gun was put to Michael Healy Ray's head. And perhaps that might explain his very dramatic flourish.
Yeah.
When he announced he was stepping out.
I actually did pick up some criticism from the Fine Gael side of the coalition last week, where people, very senior people, were saying they think that Michael Healy-Rae need not have resigned and should not have resigned, that it doesn't make any sense in a coalition dependent on independence to lose two Healy-Rae's when you could only lose one. Now, obviously, in Kerry, it might not be possible to have Danny outside of government criticising it while Michael is in it. But I think the fact that, as John Lee is reporting, apparently this ultimatum came from the Fianna Fáil side of the coalition. It was an advisor to the Taoiseach, reportedly, who put that pressure to Michael Healy-Rae. One person said to me that it would be the worst of all worlds if Michael Healy-Rae had to vote with the government and then resign anyway, like his political reputation would be in tatters. So it reads as believable to me that it would be an unpalatable situation, and how Healy-Rae would feel that really he had no choice but to resign.
We pointed out yesterday on the programme that Michael Healy-Rae and Danny, they run a machinery business. They are contractors. They need fuel. They also sell fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have such majorities that they're a shoo-in to get back. One would presume, unless this has dirtied their bib in some way, but I don't think so. I think they're playing to their own constituency audience. So they had nothing to fear from the collapse of a government.
No, but I suppose it wouldn't have escaped the notice of some of the government backbenchers that someone who gets triple a quota, like Michael Healy-Rae, or double a quota, felt that there was too much public anger on this. I think that for a lot of the rural government TDs, the fact that a Healy-Rae would resign over this is probably seen as a clarion call that there's a cohort of the public who may not necessarily have supported the tactics of the protesters, but they certainly supported the sentiment. Hmm. And that's not going to go away.
There's a story somewhere in one of the papers, which I saw this morning, suggesting that the Independent Ireland group are looking at disaffected Fine Gaelers and Fianna Fáilers who might join them.
Michael Collins, yes, is quoted in the Sunday Times that they're thinking, saying that he thinks that he has 10 Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael councillors. Now, with those kind of stories, it's best to wait and kind of believe it when you see it. Hmm. We've had this from Reform UK as well, claiming that they're always on the precipice of another Labour defection. But I think that there is a grain of truth there that maybe they don't want to join Independent Ireland, but I think there's a lot of anger in Fianna Fáil in particular, that there's a constituency there that they would have seen as previously being theirs that is being, not eaten away, but nibbled at maybe by Aintu and Independent Ireland, and that's a concern as well.
One of my listeners, a waggish listener, is borrowing from the importance of being earnest and Oscar Wilde about the Healy-Rae's. To lose one parent, Mr. Worthing, may be regarded as a misfortune. To lose both looks like carelessness.
Exactly. And when you're dealing with independents and individuals, that's a minority that can chip away. That's happened in the past. So I was surprised, actually, in a week where there was an attempted heave against Micheál Martin, that didn't become a bigger point of criticism. It seemed like Fianna Fáil was looking inward rather than outward a lot.
Now, one of the stories that's unfolding and probably too fast for the papers to deal with is the whole thing of the Strait of Hormuz and Donald Trump deciding to maintain his blockade even after the Iranians stood down their blockade. The speculation, of course, is that Trump knows exactly the effect of what he does, and he's playing the oil markets, or his pals are, and making fortunes, because by saying that the Iranians open it up, the price of oil drops. Then Trump says, I'm keeping my blockade, the price of oil goes up again, and people who understand the markets can play the markets, whether they're going up or down, and make fortunes. Anyway, we want to just hear a little bit about what is going on. An Iranian journalist, BBC Persian correspondent Kazra Naji, was analysing the situation for the BBC.
The Iranians have just issued a statement saying that what the Americans are doing, blockading Iran, is a violation of the ceasefire terms, and that Iran will continue to stop free passage of ships through the Strait of Hormuz. Don't forget that everyone, the two sides, both America and Iran, are operating on the basis of a ceasefire, a two-week ceasefire that runs out on Wednesday. According to that ceasefire, Iran opens the Strait of Hormuz in return for a stop on all fighting and all the bombardments in the region against Iran and Iran's allies. That has happened, i.e. In Lebanon, for example, there is a ceasefire in force in Lebanon, but Iran has not opened the Strait of Hormuz. At the same time, the Americans have put a blockade on it, which is again looks like a violation of the ceasefire, because during the ceasefire they're not supposed to add extra restrictions and threaten each side. So it seems that both sides are in violation of that ceasefire, and I would expect Pakistanis who are intervening in this and trying to bring the two sides together will continue to push for an extension of that ceasefire and the opening of the Strait of Hormuz as part of that ceasefire, because I don't expect either side are in a hurry to go back to the war.
I'm sure certainly the Iranians don't want war, but they're a proud people and they don't want to be humiliated either. And that feeds into that story on the front of the Sunday Independent about the 500 flights being cancelled by Aer Lingus, and possibly on the Business Post suggesting Ryanair might have to do the same later on, depending.
Yeah, and what might be of interest to your listeners is that there's already lobbying going on at an EU level from representative bodies for the airline industry that if, God forbid, it does come to that, that we start running out of jet fuel and more flights have to be cancelled, that airlines would not actually be required to offer compensation to people. They're trying to get a dispensation to say that this would qualify as an extraordinary circumstance outside of their control. And while I know that holidays are obviously a luxury, if our groceries are set to increase along with our energy prices and obviously oil, that would probably bite quite hard for ordinary people. And it would help to contribute to, I suppose, the general discontent that people are feeling towards the government here as well.
Now, all the papers are looking at Daniel Kinnan and his misfortune in Dubai being arrested. The Mail has an interesting take on it, that he felt protected by the fact that he had big money and expected a tip-off if there were to be an attempted arrest, that he'd be warned in advance. But then the idea that his links with Iran, because one of the speculations during the year was, in the event of the US putting pressure on Dubai to hand him over, that he would go to Iran as a possible safe haven. Now, given the situation there, the fact that he's seen to be even friendly towards Iranians, not good news for him in Dubai.
No, according to John Mooney in the Sunday Times, that was kind of his downfall. And there was some reporting to suggest that he had kind of been trying to court the powers that be in the Emirates, that he had adopted wearing traditional garb, that he had even spoken about wanting to convert to Islam. And even though there's so much reporting in the tabloids and the broadsheets, the one thing that everyone seems to agree on is that this did take him by surprise. He's been living abroad for over a decade and he's been living a kind of ostentatious, audacious lifestyle. The Sunday Times had some reporting last week showing him kind of openly attending sports events. We know that the Kinahans have used sports washing a lot throughout their empire over the last few years and decades. But I think it is obviously massively significant for the Irish authorities here. It's a massive boost of confidence because I think the public were starting to get a bit inured to reports of how the net is closing. I feel like that rhetoric has been out there for a very, very long time. And I think people were starting to get the sense that maybe nothing, that this arrest would never happen, maybe. So I think it's quite important, even though this is an international arrest, but I think it's quite important for morale in the Irish authorities as well.
Yeah, I mean, that idea that if you've got lots of money in places like Dubai, that you are protected, you're insulated from harm, and maybe with property deals and money changing hands, you know, people doing business with each other, even though that's drug money basically that has fueled the Kinnans, that money protects. And we see, you know, in the United States that money can get you off all sorts of raps, but sometimes you reach the end of the road.
Money did protect him for a very long time. If you wanted to be inoculated and insulated by wealth, it'd be hard to find a worse place to go than Dubai, really. But I suppose if and when this does go to trial, when he is extradited to Ireland, we know that extradition arrangement is already in place. I think it will probably be one of the most significant trials in terms of criminal justice in this country for a very long time. And again, we see everything through the prism of the Kinahan-Hutch feud, but I think sometimes we underestimate the international imprint that this drugs gang has
and
kept on the world.
One would hope that they learned from the prosecution of Hutch, which, as you know, he was released. They perhaps pressed the wrong charges. So we'll see what they do with Daniel Kinnan when his time comes in the Special Criminal Court. Some lighter stories. There's a particular refugee who's been 22 years in Kerry.
Yes, so this is a story about a turtle who has been in the aquarium in Kerry, which I'm sure a lot of listeners have visited, for 22 years. Her name is Molly. She's a sea turtle and she's going to be flown to Portugal this week before being released back into the Atlantic. Basically, Something had happened to her flippers when she was very small, which is why she was living basically in captivity for so long. Obviously, turtles have a very long life expectancy. She is just coming into the point where she would be entering, I suppose, her fertile years, if you want to put it that way. So the plan is to release her back into the wild so that she can actually start breeding again. But it's interesting, Kevin Flannery, who is the director of Dingle Ocean World, said that there was actually a fear that this might never happen, that they thought she was so injured and okay. so damaged that she'd never be strong enough again. So obviously, I'm sure kids and families will be sad to see her go, but it's a nice good news story on a Sunday.
Yeah, and if you think it may be 22 years to be in captivity and then to be released, I heard Enin Lilana during the week on the station here talking about a shark, which is 150 years old, but is only a juvenile. Will live perhaps to be 500 and doesn't become sexually mature until it's 180 years old.
Yeah, so it sounds like, I mean, 20 years in captivity, you'd think your best years are behind you, but it seems not for this particular turtle.
Mm. Other stories, Robert Watt may be in line for another big paying job.
Yes, this is a story in the Mail that basically, apparently he's being headhunted to play a key enforcer role, as the Mail puts it, to combat dereliction in Dublin. As we know, he was famously or infamously one of the most highest paid civil servants within the government. He kind of has a bit of a reputation of being, I suppose, as the Mail would describe it, a bit of an enforcer, someone who cuts through red tape and gets things done. His tenure in government is coming to an end, and I think there is some head scratching about the fact that there wasn't another SecGen role in a different department being lined up for him that he could kind of transfer to. So I think a lot of people would be quite interested to see where there's a vacancy in the Metrolink project as well, if he's interested.
Indeed. Anyway, the other postscript to all of that is, you know, the person who takes his place is not being paid as much. And how would you feel if you were that successor? Am I not worth it? Am I not worth it?
I think if you're in politics, even as a SecGen, you would maybe not want as many headlines around your role as Robert Watt had around his. So maybe it's less hassle to take the pay cut for certain officials.
At Kenny Show, Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.